Okay, I call the October 3rd, 2017 Finance Committee of the Whole Meeting of the Glencoe Park District to order. Roll call.
Commissioner Born?
Yes.
Commissioner Brooks?
Yes.
Mr. Gaines?
Yes.
Commissioner Underdunk?
Yes. Here.
Chair Ludden via phone?
Yes.
Yes. All right. All right.
Okay. Is there anyone in attendance here that might want to share thoughts? If so, we will hope you will do that within a three-minute time frame. Next item is discussion of the proposed 2017 tax levy amount. And Carol, you're in charge of this item.
All right. This time of year where we actually there's a series of steps that we have to determine what our official levy ordinance will be that is filed with the county by the last Tuesday in December. And so what the levy ordinance is, it's our ability to collect real estate property taxes for as a part of a revenue source towards our budget and use in our budget to then expend, which is the budget side that you guys approve next March. So this is the revenue side and allows the county to collect taxes on our behalf. Every year I put kind of a packet together that Jenny had sent out to you prior to, and it's kind of an interesting process because we're actually guesstimating certain things and we don't really know the actual tax dollars until next June. By law we're required to file it by December, and then once they prepare the actual calculations related to new growth, what the CPI is, which this year it will be 2.1%, and you saw some historical data in there that it really has not been, it's been 0.8, 0.7, 1.5, so it was kind of exciting to see a higher CPI figure that the county is going to use, because basically what that means is in their calculations, all current, I call it old growth, it's the current EAV in our district boundaries is limited at 2.1% as far as the amount of tax dollars over last year. So we kind of always historically have taken a look at what that CPI is and then add a component for what new growth could be. Again, the last few years, new growth has been pretty minimal, okay? I think the last big spurt was pre-2008 before the housing market kind of crashed. Teardowns and rebuilds are included as new growth, and it's always been the philosophy of the board to increase the levy amount percentage by a certain amount that we expect a new growth to raise, that we want to capture all that new growth. The philosophy being that if you don't levy for it, in the first year, any new growth is maximized out, okay? If you don't do that in the first year, it drops down in the second year and you lose that. And it's basically the philosophy that people coming in, building new homes, you want them to pay basically for structures that are already built and have been operating in the Park District. So, for instance, the Take-Off Center, we still have another 10 years to pay on this building. And the intent in levying for additional new growth is to capture that in the first year. So we typically build in a percentage around 2%. Right now, I think I put in 2.1, I put in 2.3 for a levy increase amount of 4.4%, operating only. Okay, then you've got the debt service side of it, which is completely based on what our bond ordinances are outstanding. And right now we have two refunding issues. We're coming up on the very end of the Watts refunding one. We have about two, three years left to pay on that. And then the Take-Off one we just refunded in 2015. And so that amount, they don't look at that for, they call it truth in taxation purposes. So tonight, what we need to determine is that amount, and you saw the rationale in my packet. I kind of look at by fund with the intent that we're going to raise a little bit more in the special recreation fund. Because again, we want to capture that potential to utilize ADA monies for those playgrounds and other projects that do have that ADA component to them. To be able to spend funds out of that special recreation fund. So tonight I'm asking you for just any general discussion or questions about that 4.4%, because that's really what I'm going to go in the October meeting and bring to you to pass the Truth in Taxation resolution. That resolution, by law, if you increase over 5%, you're supposed to be required to have a tax levy hearing. We have traditionally, just to be transparent, no matter what the increase, if it's 2%, 4.5%, we've never gone over 5%. We do hold a hearing, just in case anybody wants to express their feelings on that. And again, whatever we pass as a tax levy increase amount does not in any way, shape, or form mean that we're passing that as far as a tax increase. Yes, Steve.
Having had the pleasure of sitting through a number of these specific meetings over the last 5 years that I've been here, this could be my sixth meeting, but I've sat in on others in the past, and I always want to make sure that everyone understands that this is our main opportunity to capture what I call some new money or from development. And the reason that is so important is, as Carol started to say, with the investment we have made in this building that we have 10 more years to pay on, and with the other infrastructure that's already in place, this is the only way that we allow ourselves and that new members of the communities are essentially buying in to the Park District facilities that are already here. And other communities that I have been involved in, we do try to maximize this. If you don't, then that opportunity is gone to capture that new growth from new development. We don't really have the space for whole new subdivisions here. It's typically rebuilds, new business buildings, that sort of thing. And I think it behooves us to represent those that have been here already to try to capture that new money's development fund, their participation into the infrastructure that's already in place. One of the reasons they're coming here to Glencoe.
Are there any questions on the packet of information?
This doesn't necessarily commit us to spending the money in our future budget.
No, this is ability to collect. It's completely opposite of passing the budget, which is our ability to expend.
Yeah. Right. That's appropriation.
Yeah.
Correct.
Appropriate. Okay.
And that is done in March.
Okay. Any other comments from the commissioners?
I'm just curious, Carol, how do you come up with this sort of guesstimate on new growth? And is there any penalties to just saying, why not?
If you leave it on the table, you can...
Yeah, so why not just, like, say 5%?
Well, in all actuality, you can.
Yeah.
You
like,
can.
Is there any, like, downside
to
just over-guess?
See, there's a schedule in your packet. You actually see what the new growth has been. I think the last time it was over, again, 2% was in 2009 tax year. So that was several years ago.
Yes, right.
As Steve mentioned, it's pretty minimal. You could try and get an idea from the village as far as permits.
Right.
It's never really been all that accurate, and I kind of just do kind of around 2%.
Could you just say 3%?
Yes, you could. Mm-hmm. You could. And the ordinance then, it's just when the actual levy comes back, they discount it, they cut it
right.
by
They'll,
fund
yeah.
across the board proportionately.
So there's really no downside to your overestimate.
No, because if we don't have the new growth, we can't.
Yeah, you can only get what you can get anyway.
Exactly.
Okay.
Really the
all
key
right.
factor in that. And it was all tax cap legislation back in 1991
right.
that went into place to kind of say, hey, you can't go over really what the CPI factor is,
right.
but will allow you the ability to capture that new growth dollar in that first year, but then every year after that it becomes part of the old growth.
Mm-hmm. Good question.
So, okay. Any other questions?
The information in the packet in terms of the amounts that you want to ask for the same as you reviewed with me in person about 10 days ago?
Yes.
Yes, it is.
In that case, I have no questions.
Okay.
Okay, any other questions?
No.
No? Okay. Okay, as president, I direct staff, based on the discussion of the committee, to move forward on the proposed 2017 tax levy amount for approval at the October 17th regular board meeting.
Excellent.
Okay,
yep.
Ready for the next item?
Yeah.
Okay. discussion on financial procedure and policy manual. And Carol, you've got it again.
Yeah, this, if you recall a couple of board meetings, I said that I've been working on something for about 15 years. This is what it is.
We've
passed policies, we've updated policies. This is kind of a one handbook that you can go to. It's going to be used for, obviously, staff, board members, new board members, to really get a good look and a good indication of financially what our policies and procedures are. It's been something that, again, has been a goal of mine. It's something that will be very important for the distinguished agency accreditation to have one document that really has all these policies and procedures in place. Most of these, I think with the exception of the credit card policy, is a policy that's already been in place. It's just been taking it and putting the language in the format that you see it. And I'm really just kind of open to any questions, any other things you'd like to see in the manual. Yes,
so
Steve.
This is putting in a wonderful organized fashion your 15 years of experience here on how we have been doing things and putting it into a formalized thing so that if any of us aren't here for that continuity, we have it written down. So I'm not willing to accept this because that opens the door for you to consider retirement in 5 to 10 years.
Oh, good.
I can't accept it if you know you can't leave. That's how it's going to be.
There's still more. It's changing. That's the good news.
Okay.
It's constantly evolving.
So please accept it.
As I read through this with some depth, I realized other conversations we've had over a long period of time that touched on this. And to have it all here in this organized packet is part of your plans to get things to this level for future generations. So kudos and all that. But
And it's good for accreditation. We've already actually went through the review through the accreditation mentor, so this meets all those credentials too.
Good.
Yeah, it's a very handy thing. I think will be handy for staff to kind of just take a look at certain things that, you know, they might even not know that exist. And you know, they're updated as we change. You know, we updated the fund balance policy just last February, so that will be something that, as policies change, this document is ever evolving and changing too.
And as Chris would be happy to tell you, if we didn't have so many Ford trucks, I'm sure they'd last longer.
It's the Chevys that are in tough shape now.
Yeah, I get it. Sure, right.
All right, any questions on this one? Thank you, Carol, for your hard work on this.
Tremendous.
This is something I've been wanting to see, so it's very nicely done.
Carol, could you share with us like the three things that have been changed in the past few years?
Sure. I know the purchasing policy, because the state bid limit changed.
Yeah.
It went up to $25,000.
That's right.
Our fund balance policy changed, and we recently updated the investment policy, which was a policy that was pretty old.
And the credit card policy?
Credit card policy is actually a new one that we've always had credit cards, but I just wanted something in place and got some samples from some districts and talked to our auditors. Just feel comfortable in having an official policy in place as we have additional staff members that may be having a card to use just for the ease of purchasing.
And record keeping.
Great.
Commissioners, any questions?
Josh?
No. Josh, any questions?
No.
Okay, then if there's no questions, as president, I direct staff, based on the discussion of the committee, to move forward on the proposed financial procedure and policy manual for approval on October 17th, at the October 17th regular board meeting.
Thank you.
Okay.
Would you make the same recommendation, Dudley, for the credit card program policy?
I would.
Yep.
Do I need to read it again?
No.
Okay.
We got that. We got direction.
Yes. Okay. We got it.
Perfect.
We got direction. Okay.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Okay. Is there any other thing that we should talk about? Any additional items from the board to talk about?
So we do have another Finance Committee of the Whole meeting next.
Before the
regular board meeting on the 17th, very quickly to go over the health insurance recommendation and an audit engagement.
We would do that today, but she doesn't have the meeting till tomorrow. So we had to push on. So unfortunately, we can't talk about
so
it today.
So we can't do this too. Particular item.
Which one's that?
Recommendations for health insurance renewal.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly.
Yeah. So that this is being.
We have to table.
No.
Yes. Yeah. To the next meeting.
Table.
Yeah.
Table to the next meeting.
Unfortunately, the meeting's later.
Nope.
It's a committee meeting, so.
That's being a nightmare.
Okay. So. There's no other items. We got to close out here. Matters from the public. Hello?
Well, look, they're all for the next meeting.
Okay.
So I think we can adjourn
and,
this one.
Let's see. I will entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Steve? Second. And second. Stephanie? All in favor?
Aye.
Unanimous. Okay.
Yes. All right. Nice job.
Okay.
18. Yes. And now it goes over to Lisa.
It's the Lisa show.
It's the Lisa show. Do you have this? Can I just steal this for her?
Okay.
Here you go.
Okay. Alrighty. I call the October 3rd, 2017 Special Projects and Facilities Committee meeting of Glencoe Park District to order. Lisa, please call the roll and note the time.
All right, 7:18. Member Bourne?
Yes.
Member Gaines?
Yes.
Chair Brooks?
Yes.
And Commissioner Lunds also here via phone, and Commissioner Underwood is also here. All right.
So, which Lisa introduces?
Me. Well, actually, I'm going to turn it over to Chris to introduce the team that's here to talk today.
Give the podium over to John.
Just going to keep up passing the football.
Good day, sir.
Hello, John. How are you?
As you may remember, John and his team
moved
the West and Astor Park projects, as well as the parking lot out here. And they're going to be doing a couple of projects for us next year. So. John, when we first talked about the bluff, we had a lot of questions, a lot of concerns, and we really challenged John to put together an all-star team, which he's going to talk all about and what we're going to accomplish. John, I'm shocked that this is like one in a row right now with this thing for you.
When I came in and I saw it wasn't ready to go, I thought, oh, God. It's going on.
No, I know. I'm a little worried for you.
Well, let me get on the insurance. Get the glasses.
Josh, can you hear?
All right. Okay, it's great to see you all. And a lot to go through, so I'll be relatively quick. I did want to have a little reminder of the success we've had, you've had. Do you remember what this looked like? It was unbelievable. Bring the mud trap. Here, absolutely glorious. This is January of this year. And in September, like this. That would feel good. It's just great.
Wow.
We added to the The kids even sat on the theater, right?
They did.
And listened to speeches. I couldn't believe it. Anyway, it was a great time.
Oh, that's it. That's me pushing the log.
Pushing the log.
Josephine,
I'm only going to show this one slide of Chris because on the next one he dropped the kid. this is where I nearly had a heart attack. Standing beside Steve, he said, "Look, they're climbing to the top. They started moving the logs around so they could get up there." This became the most successful thing of the day.
Is that relatively safe? Are you sure?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay with that?
It's a sculpture. It's a sculpture.
Is there a big rock right next to it?
And there's a sign that says not to climb on the trees. So we moved that sculpture. We moved the stump.
Anyway.
Okay.
So here we go. So project rationale. I'm just going to go back. What needs to be done and existing conditions. here they are. And you know it. I mean, we were so excited about working on this park, Lakefront Park, and then you made the wise decision we better do something about the bluff beforehand. Anyway, as you know, the water pours across the pass straight down the bluff and also on the street, and look at the comparison. Look, the water on the right.
Oh, my.
It's absolutely phenomenal that you have a staircase left. That is just unbelievable. And the day we were all out there, it rained, and sure enough, 5 minutes later, the water was pouring down the hill. And it's for all seasons. You get storm damage here, too, in the Midway house. Here's the bluff actually moving. You can see the fracture.
Yeah.
And on the right-hand side, the retaining walls and the edging are going, and you're getting erosion directly by where they're going. You're actually sort of lucky. This is cribbing. I have never seen cribbing quite like this. Usually there are cracks, but this is right down to your reinforcing bars. This is what's holding back your bluff. The project itself, it became quite extensive. It started off, you know, as you know, with the park, dealing with drainage here, the movement of the bluff, but then if you look at that, you have to look at the overlooks, you've got to look at the road down, then you end up at the staircase and the midway. And then you start talking about the beach. This is last few years, been incredibly high water levels. You replenish your beach, but then Chris, I'm sure talking with Lisa, suggested that Baird's going to be involved and we're going to look at this coastline. We should look at the beach and preserve it, and then expand it to the next two pieces of beach. But does not include the boathouse or the pumping station, which are village owned. And this was the direction I got from Chris. I love doing this to Chris. I get this opportunity to embarrass him every single time I present. That's what you said. So we did. We're working with Baird. We're working together on the future design of North Lakeshore Drive. We're on the landward side there, the coastal engineers. And that's 7.5 miles Chicago's northern shore. Lars Barber, who's leading their team, will also be the principal in charge of this project for Baird. And you can read this yourself. A global coastal engineering company, I'll read it for you. Boats offices in Canada, Chile, United Arab Emirates, Barbados, and Australia. They're one of the best firms in the world. And the amazing thing, they're out of Madison.
Oh!
No bid. If we choose to do an office visit, do we have to choose the Madison office?
I want to go to Chile.
No, you're talking to Gulfstream.
Yeah.
Anyway, just a quick look at the team. Lars Barber, principal in charge. Caleb Bart. He's going to be their project manager. Unfortunately, or fortunately, he's been brought down to the Caribbean to do emergency work for hurricane relief. But he'll be back on Saturday. And then Richard Christensen, this is where you get into the PhDs. You do not get this with your normal firms that you come across. You're going to get the best people that you can possibly get. But tonight we're going to have Brent Sumner, who's here, a senior marine engineer. He's going to present. Domestic and international projects, you can see from 300,000 to 350 million. Chicago Shoreline Diversity to Fullerton, this was completed about 2 years ago, and you can see Australia, Oman, Brazil, Barbados, and then West Africa. Okay. Right.
So maybe just a little bit about Baird. Baird is not the, there's also a financial firm called Baird. So we're not the same. Our company is actually started by a Canadian fellow called Bill Baird. He started the company in 1981, so 36 years ago. And we were a small group of coastal engineers is what we call ourselves, but it's we have approximately 75 employees spread across 9 offices. You can see the blue dots don't quite come through up here, but those are project locations with the
the office locations, but our, even though we've done thousands of projects kind of worldwide, our three main offices and where our first offices were around the Great Lakes, so Ottawa, Toronto, and Madison. So we do a lot of our North American work is actually mostly in the Great Lakes. So, and since we're a niche firm, we do only projects where water meets land. So we don't do anything inland, and we don't do anything very rarely far offshore. So it's always right where water meets land. And really our areas of expertise and capabilities, since we are coastal engineers, we do things like shore protection systems, beaches and lagoons, bluff stability, bluffs, waterfronts, marinas, habitat restorations and deltas, ports and marine terminals. And then we take projects from concepts all the way to construction. So we're a full service firm. And kind of the key differentiators for Baird, because we are in the Great Lakes, and Madison was one of our first offices, we have a lot of experience in Lake Michigan, specifically a lot of on the West Coast, and the Southwest Coast even more specific, as that picture shows. I think there's, if you count them, there's probably 25 or so dots on there. But with our staff, a lot of our staff had advanced degrees in very specialized studies like geomorphology and coastal engineers with hydraulics and running numerical models and things. So some firms will have coastal expertise, but on a much smaller level, we're all coastal engineers. Just some of our projects that involve beaches and bluffs. You're probably familiar with nearby here we have Rosewood Beach that was done not too long ago. We worked with the Army Corps of Engineers. We did the final design for them, the modeling and then the layout of the breakwaters, how big they are, how far offshore, what the shape of the beaches look like. And Lake Forest Park in Lake Forest, that's been done for a while, but Baird was a coastal engineer on that as well. And another consultant did the park side of things. That's been a real successful story over the years, and you referenced a lot. Wilmette to Waukegan, it's a study we did of 22 miles of shoreline, again for the Corps of Engineers, looking at the littoral system. And you know, there's bluffs here with a lot of mismatch of shore protection. It's really a sand-starved area, and it has a clay bottom that's exposed to down-cutting. So it's kind of a problematic coastal area, just in general.
When was that study done?
That one's been done a while ago. I couldn't give you. I'd have to get back to you on that. Probably, I would say it's been 10 years.
Okay.
The two on the left side there, the one upper left is up in Wisconsin by Port Washington. They have very large bluffs up there, 100-footer bluff. So not as you don't have that kind of scale here, but we were involved with that. And also one fairly recent up in Canada, really tough problematic soils on Lake Nipigon. People call it the Sixth Great Lake, but it was about a mile. Both those are about a mile of shoreline that we regraded the bluffs and put tow protection. So some recent projects. And just in terms of bluff stability, kind of think key factors for stability and instability are, of course, the soil types, the soil properties, the steepness of the bluff. But the real causes of the instability tend to be the surface water runoff, the infiltration, the groundwater. And that's because the groundwater adds weight to soil and it decreases strength, causes failures. And tow protection, a lot of you can see in the shot here, you get tow erosion that starts to occur, like the down cutting leads to bluff slumping, sliding. Really, we had Lake Michigan had a long period of low, kind of below average water levels, and in the news lately you've heard a lot about bluff failures again, and that's because we're in a period of above average water levels again on Lake Michigan. So that's where tow protection and tow erosion really becomes, when you undercut over Stevens, and then it just kind of is a feedback loop. So specific to the Glencoe project site, really our plan of action, what we're proposing to do is to collect some geotechnical information out at the site in the form of borings, boreholes, and test pits. The figure in the middle there shows out of them distributed across the site. Looking at the historical information of the structures that are out there, the drainage infrastructure, what information is available historically, and use that. So we'll collect some geotech. The second part would be to look at the global and local accessibility. So basically looking for slip circles, information and the groundwater information that we collect. And then looking at the structures that you have out there around the site, the retaining walls, the halfway house, beach house and whatnot, and coming up with recommendations for remediation if necessary. In the stormwater review, we're really looking at what's happening with things. Can we direct some of that water that's on the top, on the tableland, back into the site, and try not to disturb trees, of course, but trying to get it from going over the slope back into maybe the city's storm sewers, directing it back down to the lake that way, or using the existing systems that are there and better utilizing what's there to catch and relay it down the slope, and also looking at it as it crosses your beach and those outfall locations. The last is really looking at the coastal structure in the beach, how it's functioning in terms of, are you getting any of those, since we have high lake levels now, are you losing beach? Probably are. Is it affecting your toe, your bluff, and is that causing any problems? And what can maybe be done in the overall structure, locations, can something be done, reoriented, or the beach handled in a different way? And lastly, we're going to look at some, the costs of the recommended options and concepts that we're going to put forward for all those different areas.
And prioritizing those, what things need to be done
right
to guarantee the future of the recreation spaces.
Right. So looking at, again, kind of concepts that we can look at, not taking them all the way to final design, but we're in kind of a reconnaissance and feasibility concept study phase right now for this. And really the next step for this is that geotechnical data acquisition. We're getting into fall, it's been great weather. It is October, it could turn any day now. So getting a team out there and being able to look at getting that borehole program, the test pit program, and being able to look at the groundwater before we get frost in the ground is kind of the key to getting things going.
Thank you.
Thank you, that's great.
I've known Ed Torres for
25 years.
At least.
Okay. 1993, we met.
Well.
We were 14, I think.
That's right. We both worked at the Chicago Park District. I worked as a planning supervisor. He was an architect.
Preservation architect.
Many of the buildings along the coast he worked on. When Chris asked me who would be good for your structures, it was instantly this man, but I made sure that everyone else agreed. So I contacted a bunch of historians and said, who would you recommend for Glencoe? And they said, BLS and Torres. So confirmed. Architectural planning and historic preservation, sustainable design, local, national, and international markets, more than 30 design awards, federal, state, and local government, and MBDB, like our own firm.
What is the bottom? What were the initials?
MB, it's Minority Business Enterprise, and Disadvantaged Business Enterprise.
Oh.
Same as ourselves, Hispanics, as you notice on this. Anyway, Ed, please.
Thank you, John. As John mentioned, I was a preservation architect in charge of about 80 parks in the Chicago Park District system. And since then, I joined Barlow Tosa Studio in 96, and then I acquired the firm about 4 years ago, so I'm the president of the firm now, and we do a lot of work. We do a lot of work in the Chicago area, and we do a lot of historic buildings. We were founded in 1990, the company was, so we're in our 27th year. So we've been around for a while. We have won a number of awards, but what I really want to emphasize here is that we have expertise in masonry, stone, the things that, and concrete, the things, the elements, the materials that are comprised of your historic structures. And I know how the halfway house is part of your logo, and I know how important that is as a jewel building. And of course, we recognize that. Some of the projects that we worked on, I just did a little mosaic of some of them. MSI, Museum of Science and Industry, we've been working on them for 6 years now. As they get money, they call us, we get a grant for $2 or $3 million, and we move around the building. They don't have the $20 or $30 million to do it all at one time. So we've restored, we've had 5 different projects. We're restoring stonework, masonry work, really getting into sort of the same steps I was mentioned previously about doing an investigative analysis or investigative assessment, coming up with a plan, and then making recommendations, and then eventually those will become documents and things like that. We've done a couple of monuments for the Park District, Columbus Monument in Grant Park, and then Grant Monument in Lincoln. There's also a Lincoln and Grant. I always love saying we did the Grant and Lincoln and Lincoln and Grant. I don't know how that happened. One of the jewel projects in another park along the Palm there in Humboldt Park is the Humboldt Park Boathouse. It's a beautiful structure. It looks just like that. The photograph's great, but it actually does sort of have that same component. So we've been doing this for a long time. We work with a lot of stakeholders. John mentioned that we've done municipalities. Majority of our work is public work. So we deal with stakeholders. We do public meetings, participatory meetings. And we work with people like you a lot. We know that you have tight budgets. We know that you're accountable for other people, the public. So we know all that, and we try to work in sync and coordinate and collaborate with our client and you being part of that public entity. And of course, we've been doing this for many years. 27 years we've been doing this. One of the things I want to add on here is we do have a tough quality assurance program. So what I've sort of instilled since taking over the company is I now assign 2 principals to the project. Principal in charge would be me. I would be doing the overall direction of the project, but I also assign a principal who will do the quality assurance, look at the documents, or look at whatever we deliver, deliverables, with a fresh eye, with somebody who knows that. And that would be Andrea Terry. She's been doing historic preservation for over 20 years, and she would be the one that would do that QA, QC process as a principal level. Kirk Sipple, he's a number of those projects that I showed, he's the project manager for MSI. He's working on City Hall in Chicago now. He just finished Lang Tech, who we worked with John. Office, we just finished that. It's just won 2 major awards, Chicago Building Congress, just earlier this spring. And it's a $58 million renovation for that high school, Lane Tech, 4,000 students. And John was the landscape, his company was the landscape architect. We've collaborated. We've also worked on University of Chicago work together recently in Barra Latosa and Ulta Manu, although we've worked 25 years ago already, so it's a full cycle, and hopefully we're going to be doing this great job. So some of the projects that we've worked on along the shoreline and historic buildings, this is the bathing beach house. It's in Miller Beach in Indiana, Gary, Indiana. It's been restored. It's actually a CMU building. It looks like stone, but it's actually a concrete masonry unit building. Hmm. It was originally a bathing house. Now the park district there rents it out for weddings. I have actually attended a few weddings here, and it's beautiful with the with the debris coming through along the lake, and you, up there there's a terrace up atop, and that's typically where the wedding, the reception happens. It's a beautiful building, historic. It needed a lot of work. I don't have a four shot here, but if you can imagine all of this being restored along the lake shore. One of our newest projects is the Century Project District in Beverly Shores in Indiana, another one in Indiana. This is the one of the houses that was part of the Century of Progress fair. And it was moved a long time ago, in the 30s, 1934. And they moved, a person moved five of the houses. Four of them have been restored. This is the last one, and this is called the House of Tomorrow. It's one of the first buildings that had a curtain wall, had a air conditioning, dishwasher, had all these things that were part of the future. This is built in 1933, mind you. So we're just starting this process, but this is along the lake shore. It's actually in the National Park Service, Beverly Shores. So National Park Service has a review in Indiana Landmarks also, plus this, so there's a lot of stakeholders, plus the public, are all going to be looking at how we're going to be restoring this and making it back to the House of Tomorrow. So, to your building here. So, the first thing I noticed that is there's a lot of deterioration here, but it's still holding up. The arches are still doing what they have to do, and I actually love the structure.
Okay.
That it's the size of it and everything. It's perfect for that halfway point up there. And okay, it's a little bit out of order. I'm sorry. Let me get back to the arch. So you can see we would do the same process as mentioned before. We would do our assessment, look at what you have, how. And take a picture, a snapshot of all the existing conditions, determine what kind of stone you have, what's in the joints, what's the mortar that's holding up the joints, what's the flooring, how is that all, what's the substrate of the flooring. So we basically would do a somewhat of a scientific analysis or assessment of how this thing's put together. So we know when we have to solve the problem, we know what we're dealing with. It also may determine some of the problems, but a lot of the problems is that roof is already past its time. It's shaling, it's cracking, and you can see daylight. So obviously that's one of the first things, that roof, the water's coming right into the in through the wall, and we would come always to rebuild that. Your beach house, you do have some cracks and things like that. We would also do some analysis of the concrete and determine, and working with the stone, how we would address that. And here's the inside portion of the halfway house. The beautiful arch is open, which I really love. And inside the below in the roof structure, there's also a lot of deterioration. There's a lot of rotten, dry rot, and that would have to be replaced. But we would look at drawings, and we would all replace those and have them replica pieces or Dutchman. I'm always a believer, try to keep the original material as much as possible. If we can save some of those elements, then we want to save them. It's not really that much more expensive to do, but then you can say this is all original, or 99% original. That's what you want to strive for. So that's how we work on that. So here's the edge of the roof. You see how it's completely deteriorated. Now, when I was at the Park District, we had a number of these structures that had clay tile roof, Ludovici's they were called. Ludovici is the company. I'm not quite sure what this is. I didn't get in the ladder to see it, but it would be marked. Now, we would look at this to see, what would be the suitable material? Is it clay? They do make some concrete tiles that are matching. They're a little bit less or more cost effective. But, you know, it depends. It depends on, at the end, what alternate do we want to do. Just like was mentioned before, we want to see what's the most appropriate thing to do here. I'm sort of a romantic person. I would like to put back the clay tile. I think clay tile will last another 100 years.
or 80 years at least. And the stone, you know, when we restore the stone, that'll be forever. So, but it's you can see how it's really just past its prime. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Well, I hope that shows what talent on the project and what you'll end up after this examination. You'll do the analysis. Then we'll get to a stage where we'll produce a report. We'll review that with staff and with you. There'll be recommendations, alternates, and then there'll be opinion of probable cost. So you've got an idea of what it's going to cost and also what you should, as you said, prioritize. And then we'll work with staff and eventually then do a final presentation to you. And you will have a report that will detail all of this.
Excellent. Do you have any questions for John and his team?
I do. Question. Who's going to take a look at the staircase? Is that everybody?
It's everybody.
Everybody.
It's a team.
Actually, we're all going to look at certain portions of this whole. It's going to have to be this because it was mentioned that the testing is going to the coring of the men that will be done underneath the substrate of the structure. But what I'm going to be determining is, how do we put this back to make it look like it was while he's doing underneath and making sure that it's going to hold up? I'm going to make sure that it's clean and it's done in a proper way. And one of the things we do when we go to construction documents, we put in our specs, minimum qualifications of who can do the work. It's got to be a mason contractor who's done this work before, who's worked with this stonework before. We can put these things within that section of the specs, not the GC, but it's really the subcontractors that are doing the work, not the general contractor. So I'm really particular, we are particular about who's going to be restoring that. So basically, I guess I'm doing the stuff that is above ground or that you see, the historic fabric is what I'm going to be addressing, making sure that's done correctly, that's cleaned correctly, it's placed back. And then underneath and all the other things, you're going to be doing that type of work, right?
So. Yeah, you go through this. Well, I speak as I wrote the proposal. So they'll be, what we'll do is make sure that the test pits and the cores we take of the soil suit both of them, okay? So that we keep your costs down.
Yeah.
And that we will all be there when they are done, so we can examine groundwater penetration, type of soil, permeability.
Appropriateness.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Appropriateness from him. Then also looking at the foundations. We have no idea what your foundations are like. The ones, what we see structurally there doesn't look too good. So what is it actually down like below? And how are the walls actually meeting those foundations? What's going on down there? So we'll all be there having a look at that. It'll be very interesting. Ooh. And the timing is good because now your beach is going to be packed. But we do have to get moving.
Mm-hmm. Understood. One of the questions that came up was that we felt there could possibly be some pressure as the bluff is exerting pressure on the beach house down at the bottom of its bluff towards our south end. And so I imagine that's going to be part of the study,
yes.
Or borings, or looking at the foundations. Okay.
Yes. And that's something that's a concern, because that's actually one of the big things, isn't it? Keeping the toe protected.
One of the things that can be difficult, we're not going to be able to take boreholes all over the place. We're going to take some boreholes. You ask the geotech how many boreholes they want. but we're going to take some and see what we can see. And if we see something that's a lot of variability, then that tells us something at least that we might have to take some more later. But yeah, we'll be looking at the structures visually to see where are they distressed and what's going on and what might be causing them.
And then we mentioned that we're not going to be looking, we're not looking at the bluff Well, the bluff where the boathouse is and where the water plant is, that's not Park District land on the bluff and the property at the top of the bluff, is it?
The water plant is the village's, and then the boathouse, we own the land in front of it, a little up the bluff, but not the whole bluff.
So that's not part of this study, is my question.
Yes. Yeah.
You've excluded it?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
However, Baird is going to examine the bluff by North Beach.
Yes.
And extrapolate from the test pits and everything else they're going to study in the bluff by Lakefront Park. They can extrapolate enough information to tell you what's going on there.
And how far east is the study going to go?
It goes right up to the park. And one of
east would be towards the water.
Oh, sorry. That's his territory.
Part of it, we're looking right at the beach and the beach structures. So we're going to be, there's publicly available information, LIDAR, that was done fairly recently. Mm-hmm. But that's going to be able to give us the near shore bathymetry as well as the topography on your bluff.
So that's a little bit bigger scale of a report than what we had originally envisioned when we wanted to do the lakefront park.
Right.
We said before we get there with the flooding that we all saw that weekend, maybe we should look at our bluff. Now we're looking at our beach. And what I would like to say to the board members here and to Josh as well, that we have the TACA Center, we have Watts, and we have our crown jewel, which is the beach. I've only been in town 30 years. I've only been involved in the Park District 28 years. This might be the single most important study we've ever undertaken. And I hope you'll all keep an open mind. What the report will come back with might be some actionable items that we're going to have to plan for in the long future and get the community built around. But this is almost overdue, and I'm so thrilled that we're moving in this direction.
Quick comment.
Yes.
Well, actually, I'm the chair, so I've got no one to ask it myself.
Yeah. You go right ahead.
Chair
recognizes the chair. I recognize myself.
You know, at the risk of sounding, I respect all of your work. You're working with historically significant structures. I'm not sure our halfway house is a historically significant structure, but
It is. It's documented.
It's documented.
Okay. I will say there was a Shakespearean drama played out on our board regarding the 100-year roof prior to you, Stephanie, coming on, and it was a hard-fought dilemma all about whether or not it made sense to preserve things exactly as they were. And I feel like the whole project is going forward, not your side, but your side, with an assumption that things have to stay the way they are. We need to preserve them, or that is the goal, to preserve things as they are. And I just want to caution you to be as open-minded as possible, and maybe because I'm just very pragmatic and not very traditional, that you entertain not necessarily having to preserve everything as it is, but
no, that's why I mentioned the concrete tiles and substitute.
Yes.
Again, we work with a lot of public entities. Budgets are tight.
Yeah.
So what do we do then? We have to think creatively, and our team will come up with some of, if that's appropriate and that's your directive, then yes, we will look at all the possibilities and to see what fits the best at the end of the day. And that's right away I mentioned the concrete house.
Right.
I said I would prefer the clay, but that's not my decision, the final end.
Right.
And the budget may determine some of the decisions when we get down to it and how that works. But we also can craft our documents to have alternates to see maybe we can squeeze in a few things here and there. But the material now, it doesn't look bad. I mean,
right.
To reuse it, the stone.
Right.
It's not deteriorating, it's just what's happening is the water and everything else, and there and the joints are already gone. So I think it's just, that's why with the steps, I want to mention who's going to do the steps. I think the steps and material, the material and the steps are really well, they're still holding up. So it would be that, it may be that we just take it out, do all the work underneath the substrate, and then put that material back in. That's going to be the most cost effective, the cheapest way to do this.
Right.
So in some ways, having the material in such good shape which doesn't have it in such a great shape that it will determine that we're going to reuse it because yes. It's the cheapest than buying new stuff. But you know, we'll probably have some replacements, and then we'll match the stone and blend it in to make it look like it's part of. I'm not predicting the picture, but I have this feeling that we're going to be able to use, with the exception of the roof, that's gone, that's already passed the time, but we're going to be able to use a lot of the stone that's there now in the halfway house and try to preserve for that reason. Not for preservation, but for cost. Mm-hmm.
And just quickly, Chris, could you refresh our memory? We did a stairwell renovation something. We did something recently. Can you just define for everyone what that was?
What we did recently, obviously the halfway house is a little bit different because it has historical designation. We had a section of the stairwell pretty much outright collapse on us before the season. We did one section in a very accelerated fashion, and that was a total rebuild, and we did some of the landings. It was around $100,000, $180,000, I believe, something like that. You know, I think that we waited until it failed, and we had dirt. So I think the fact that we're here now looking at it, you know, they could come and say, you know, we're going to look at these stairs in three phases. You know, maybe this is what you need to do now, you need to do it in 5 years, you need to do it in 10 years. Because I think the whole point of this is we don't ever want to be in the position of doing a project when the halfway house is laying on the beach or something of that nature 20, 30 years down the line.
Yeah, I think they understand that. Yeah. So it's just looking at the whole thing, and we might not make a decision on materials, but they're going to give us all the options.
Okay.
And that's part of the proposal, is to give us all the options what we do. You know, what we want to do is make sure that water's not streaming down our stairs. It should go where it naturally should go. So that's some of the things
in the park, and then put that problem right onto the beach with the stairs.
Yeah. So it's just a very holistic proposal, looking at everything, and then we can decide what we're going to do moving forward. So
this proposal is only about the bluff, not about the park at all. So not about any of the water.
This proposal is just
John will answer that. Hold on.
Where this all started was, what do we do with all this water in the park?
Right.
And then the permeability, and then the weight, etc., and it grew from there. Whatever we do, we've got to stop the water going over the edge and going down the staircase.
Right.
So it means that we will be changing or making proposals to change the grading in the park, which will be difficult because we've got some beautiful mature trees.
Yeah.
And relying on Baird to come up with proposals for different types of way of moving that water to where we want it to go.
Okay, so it kind of does encompass
It does.
The whole thing.
Yeah.
There is
the
no
thing.
Point in doing one piece.
Right.
And actually, Chris was great about that, because when we started talking about this, he said, well, you know, we can't come back, you know, 10 years from now and say, why didn't we look at the beach? Why didn't we do this? So that, you know, have an all-encompassing study.
Steve.
I wanted to say that with this being the crown jewel and bringing this team together to look at this whole site, I'm expecting to see a very comprehensive report on the state of that entire park, bluff, and beach system. I think we're overdue for getting a Friends of the Lakefront revitalized. We had so much success with that when I first moved in the community, with getting the money we needed for Friends Park, with getting the community behind the big Watts redo that took two referendums to get passed. But this is a project of that magnitude if we choose to do it right for future generations. This could be one of those reasons that we could consider possibly going to bonding if we realize what we can do here. And I'd like for us to keep our minds open that this is a long-term overdue renovation of our crown jewel.
And that's definitely something we could talk about later if you want to resurrect that group with the president, and who, if we could find volunteer chairmen outside the board and things like that.
Right.
Is there any questions about to these gentlemen about this proposal? Josh?
Can I ask a question, please?
Yep. Go ahead, Josh.
Yeah. First, let me apologize if this was clear from the materials you presented or if I just missed something because I couldn't hear it. So you're looking at the bluff by the main swimming beach not behind the water plant, and then at the lower portion of the bluff on the northern boating beach. Is that correct?
Yeah, we're going to look at the bluffs all along there, but the where the pumping station is, it runs into the bluff, and that gets us into a much more grandiose project. And so what we'll do is extrapolate information from the bluff to the north, and then the tests we do by Lakefront Park, that bluff.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, they're about 100 feet away from each other, so we should be able to extrapolate enough information to figure out what's going on behind the pumping station.
Okay, thank you. And then, can you just clarify, when you say you're studying the beach, I wasn't sure what that means. Again, probably could see it on the screen or something, but could you just elaborate that?
Basically, it's just looking at how your beach is functioning now. So we will be able to look at some survey data that, again, is publicly available in the form of LIDAR, which covers both the bathymetry and the topography. And we can also see what's available over time to see how that morphology has occurred in terms of the beach littoral cells. We also have different studies that we've done surrounding the project site. So we'll look at past project information for that. And really look at the configuration of your structures right now to see if there could be something that was tweaks, basically, that could be done with your structures that are out there, whether they're abutments or groins, to make your beach perform better. It also kind of ties into, I understand you have a couple outfalls that go directly through the beach. Whenever you have water falling onto the beach, it just cuts through like butter. So maybe there's something. Those are problematic. Just it's hard to deal with. A beach is dynamic, and you're trying to put a non-dynamic structure in a dynamic zone. So it's a challenge, but that's something we'll be looking at.
You didn't see one of the slides, and it showed all the projects along Lake Michigan shore that Baird has done. And really, there were so many red dots, you could hardly see anything else along the shoreline. So they've got this wealth of information about how the lake really operates, particularly in this area as well. And there was also on the list of people who are going to be working on this, some of probably the smartest people you're going to get working on beach and bluff stabilization.
I think my question about what we're going to learn from the beach is, like, you know, what are you going to tell us, that it's going to shrink or it's going to grow, or things that we could do to prevent it from doing one or the other? Or
I think we're going to try to answer those questions. We're going to have to see what the data tells us when we get into it, and we'll if there's more work that needs to be done, we might have to say that. But at this point, we'll be able to see what we can see and make the calls from that.
Mm-hmm. Dudley, quick question.
Yeah. Will you be able to measure the creep on the bluffs?
We can look at the trees, basically. There's the degree of the age of the trees and how much those trees are tilted will give you an indication of how much the bluff has creeped. But yeah, creep is a hard thing whenever you're building right on a slope, and regardless, when you're talking mass failures and things, those are deep rotational slides. Mm-hmm. Soil over a period of many years, it will creep. And adding water to that scenario increases that. But I mean, in terms of looking and measuring creep, right now that's not in our scope in terms of we're not deploying instrumentation out there that will be measuring things, but we will be looking for the trees that are on the slope, the size of those trees, and the angle of.
One of our concerns is the beach house, and of course the bluff is right behind that, and I'm concerned about bluff failure taking out part of that building. That's right here.
Right. Yes.
Yeah. The other thing I hope you'll explore fully is dewatering the tablelands above or adjacent to the bluff.
that could make a really big difference. How not only if we do it, but how we do it, including you know, pumps or dry wells, or you know, I'm sure you're going to have some ideas for us on how to do that. Great.
Okay.
Just very quickly, yes. I know you have such a good rapport with the village, and I'm wondering if they've been formally informed about the study, if they would be interested in supporting a study of their own section, in that it's all happening at the same time.
Well, they are aware of it, and we can bring that to their attention, but their bluff is right behind the water house.
Yes.
I don't know how much they're worried about, or the water plant, how much they're worried about it, but we will bring
it. It seems practical. There's a home above there.
Yeah.
There's a home above it, and that's part of it. So.
I don't either. It just seems like a practical thing.
Chairperson, what is it we're looking to get now? Are you asking the members of the committee to approve or to recommend to the board that we fund this study?
We're looking for consensus from the board to put this to the October board meeting so that they can get started to approve a proposal of $69,750,000 plus expenses for this proposal, for everything they indicated in their presentation, which is written in our document.
That's for 69, all of this, all three teams?
Yes.
That's pretty remarkable.
What did we budget?
That's
did we have a budget amount?
We're going to budget 80 next year.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Yep.
So there's the,
we didn't tell them that.
The drilling and stuff is separate.
The drilling and stuff like that is separate, so it'll go in within that amount.
So we're close.
All right.
Ten plus.
I just wanted to make sure.
Darn, right? No, the drilling's probably, he said it's about 10 plus.
Yeah, that's what we figured that would bring us to that 80.
Lisa, just to clarify, if we agree here, they can move forward. Is that correct?
Well, technically, they can't move forward until we have our vote.
We still have to vote at a committee meeting.
But if we kind of get an idea, then we can work out the contract and get that ready to go as soon as we're done.
Okay, good.
So as soon as we officially approve it, they can technically start the next day.
Okay, so I'm just going to go around here. Dudley, are
you? I'm good.
Okay, yeah. Stephanie?
Absolutely.
Okay, Lisa's good.
Josh?
I think it's a great idea.
Okay, so we have to put it to formal vote on the 17th, I believe, but yes.
Looks like it's a done deal. All right, thank you. Thank you very much
for coming.
We look very, very much forward to working with you.
Thank you. All righty. So,
okay. Other business, I think, right? Yeah, other business.
Okay, so.
Which is pretty much me.
We have nothing more to discuss because we've discussed it and we've sort of
for that one,
put our direction to this.
And other business. So my thing is, I just wanted to let you know that Astor Park officially opened. Fences are down.
To see it. Hopefully, it's on it tonight. Even with no, I was thinking we should have lights. Just kidding.
She goes.
You're very funny, Lisa.
That's very funny. Sophia played on it. My kids played on it.
Did they enjoy it?
Yeah, they loved it.
It's very pretty.
Very pretty.
It's very pretty.
It's way more relaxing to sit there. Like, I kind of didn't enjoy going there before.
Than before? Okay.
I really didn't. Like, I'd go, but it just didn't, like, feel comfortable.
Yeah.
And I just sat on the bench and watched It's like a different atmosphere.
Yeah. Oh, good. The picnic table's still coming. That's not here.
Yeah, I was wondering about that. Yes. I felt like it was there before, and I, like, couldn't remember.
But it'll be on that big concrete pad, a picnic table. Yeah. But it's coming.
We're talking about Astor.
Astor, we love it.
And how pleasant it is.
Yeah, it has a pleasant,
visually very pleasant.
Thanks,
I think she visits it with her kids, and it's just a very different feel, and it feels very welcoming.
Nice job. Nice job. And the tree placement is perfect, I think. So
I'll like to make the shade still is It's still not that shady yet, but it's more.
But and it will be. It will grow in
it. Will, when it grows in.
And I think the next summer will give us some ideas too.
Yeah.
Inadequacy or adequacy.
Yeah. I'm interested to see how. I mean, it's definitely more than before.
Yeah.
But it was a nice breezy day and it was kind of chilly.
Yeah.
So it's hard to tell.
Yeah. Oh, good.
But they like
yeah.
it. Good.
I
excellent.
I like it clear and clean without so much shrubbery.
Isn't that nice? Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah.
That way.
So it's very clean. It's very easy.
I would keep
very
it
hard to do.
Clear and clean and minimal. It's just you're not planning on growing on planting a bunch of shrubs there, are you?
No.
No.
We're keeping it very Hey, Steve. Okay. We're going to continue.
She's very ready for it.
So we're just going to we're going to keep it very clean. The sign is being
installed. I'm aware.
Is this what happened?
We had some proxy calls.
Thank you.
Oh, I know that. Yeah. We knew exactly what was happening. Chris and Iris have been on that map. We know what was happening. The park sign will go in.
Probably went in today.
Probably today.
Today or tomorrow.
You see the sign? So it looks really,
the mini sign.
Really nice out there.
And the neighbors will be thrilled.
I hope so. I hope they're thrilled. I think it's a great park for that age group
and for that size park.
Yeah, it's a perfect size pocket park, right? Would you say?
It's truly an effort.
And you really don't really know. I got to be honest, like you don't really notice the fence. When the fence was first put in without the grass and the trees, I was like, oh. Kind of like an eyesore, but now everything's together.
Yeah.
It looks great. It kind of just fades in.
It fades in.
It's very natural.
Yeah.
It's like a park.
Totally
I would say that's what it looks like. If we didn't put that fence in, it would totally look like their playground.
Once the sign is up, I mean, trash can and the... All
trash can's in. I see the trash can.
It came together really.
So that's an example of a very nice, well done pocket park.
Really nicely done pocket park. I don't know if every pocket park.
We had any complaints about the lights at the West School?
Okay, so you know what? Yes, a few. Not that bad, a few. So what we did in response to that is that we moved, as we told the neighbors we were going to do, is that we moved the light poles around to avoid the glare. So right now we have two light poles facing the tennis courts and just one on the other side that faces the house.
See, I was amazed when you first put that up there that you had two of the light poles facing west
because,
at the houses.
Because a neighbor wanted that because they were worried about the noise of the machines. Yeah. So once he discovered that the machines weren't loud, then we were able to move one to the other side because of the glare. So now we have two. Now we just moved
two on the west side and one on the other.
Yeah, and we just moved that other one back to the west side because we were getting too many shadows. It wasn't safe. So we'll see tomorrow as we play this.
The coaches have been moving their practices around so they're under the concentrations of light.
They've been doing a good job.
Breaking into smaller groups also.
Yeah, probably the biggest complaint we got was about parking. And we have sent out for the third time letters to all the coaches and organizations telling the parents, please observe the parking rules. And actually, I did that last week when I was at conference, and the neighbor that complained said it was noticeably better. So that's
people
good.
People weren't parking in the parking lot between the school and the tennis courts. Everybody wanted to park 6 inches from where their kid was, sit in their car, and watch them practice. Yeah.
So we've been asking them to obey the no parking signs, so it's a little bit better, and we'll keep. And we've asked, the public safety to make patrols and just remind cars not to park there, which they are going to do. So, we talked to the neighbor that made the complaint, and we had a nice conversation with them. I'm trying to think if there's anything else with that. We brought a shed in for football. They seem to have a problem with their trailer parking in the wrong places. So Chris brought a trailer. We had a shed. We had placed it back there in the football field or behind the back shop so they can store their things. So hopefully they won't have to bring the trailer every day, and that'll be less. So that will be less of a problem. It was they were parking them.
We have two at Berlin Field. We have the smaller one that we keep the remote control for the sign for the scoreboard. The latch on that's gone. I'm the one that keeps sticking a twig through what's there to keep it kind of close to the elements. And when the coaches do use the home run fence, they seem unable to close the high-rise shed that's stored in. And when the baseball season's over before winter, will we be storing the home run fence somewhere else?
Yes. We typically put them in the cold storage because they make good houses for mice. So we take them up. They won't stay out there.
Yeah. So one latch is broken, the other one's never closed. Okay. They're just So it's one size larger.
So the lights, you know, obviously the neighbors, some aren't happy about the decision. And like I say, they're all thrilled with it, but they understand. Quite a few of them said they're glad to see the field used.
Yeah.
But they understand that it is a bigger disruption to what their normal neighborhood is like when there's nighttime programming. So we really appreciate their understanding and patience during this year. I assured them it was temporary, that once that day hits that we promised in the letter, we will be removing the lights and that they will not be returning next year. So we will stick by that promise, that it's not a permanent structure. So
and once the board does, when the board moves to approve the that Carol mentioned, your financial policy, procedure, and credit program, what is the Park District royalty from all the other park districts that are going to want to buy that?
We all share our information, including Carol's got some of this information from other park districts, so we are very nice. It's very nice.
The wheel, we don't have to.
Yep, we don't. We create the wheel. Is there any appetite tonight, any stamina to talk about some ideas of play equipment at the three parks that we'll be start planning on immediately, because we have some just to get an idea of what kind of play apparatus you're looking at on three of the parks. You guys, would you like to have a little discussion on that?
Three parks are
Woodlawn, Jefferson and Vernon, and Old Elm. Would you want to?
I don't mind if you discuss it, but I'd probably drop off because
okay.
I trust you can make the right choice, and I'm gaining a lot from being on the phone for that.
Okay. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you
for attending. I'm not looking for, actually, do you say I want this piece? I'm looking more for...
you don't want my pictures?
I do want your pictures. I do want your pictures, and I want you to write on the top of where... And I can put in my... We brought some pictures of different ones that we have seen, and we just want to kind of get an idea. We don't want you guys to get trapped at any kind of play piece of
play. Do we have any mini themes in the back of our mind?
Well, that's a... So I'm going to give you some images that we have seen out in the park. Let's see if I can turn this one around. Doesn't look like I can.
Well,
I don't have to. I mean, you can look at this sideways. I think I might have another one.
Well, that's Winnetka.
This is Winnetka's. Mm-hmm. How much do you think, who's been to Winnetka Playground?
I've been there three times. We were just there this weekend.
How much do you think that playground cost?
They repurposed a lot of the stuff.
No, how much do you think it cost? They can't
repurpose
a lot of
the stuff.
Who's going to win this game?
How much do you think it cost? We're just wondering. So it's trying to get a gauge of if you guys have a realistic
I think it's a maybe equivalent to Friends Park, not counting the structure below behind it. I don't know if that structure was built.
So just the playground equipment.
Just
like
the playground
equipment here, how much you think? Just take it off.
Altogether, 300.
We're talking about the playground.
For sure.
Keep on going.
If you're asking that,
just
that
equipment.
Means it's
just
like
equipment.
I said it's 67.
Million?
It is, yes. But for the play equipment only part of this park is about $800 to $1 million.
Was that installation everything?
That's everything.
Because they have like that whole structure behind it. They have
like the gazebo itself, like we did something very similar to that. That number is separate from that. I mean, that playground as it is right around between $700,000 to $800,000 as is.
Yeah. Okay, and what was Friends?
Friends was $550.
Because that has just, Friends has just as much equipment.
That has more.
It's got more moving stuff.
It's also got more structures. Friends has a lot of hits and pieces.
Yeah.
And that was also 5 years ago. So,
Go
here. Okay, so we want to give you some, we're going to go through some of just a little bit ideas. Just get an idea of what kind of play equipment you're looking at. So let's talk Woodlawn Park, because it has the biggest footprint, right? So we should start with there. So this is an example of a park that has a lot of, it's spread out. This is kind of a park that we could have in Woodlawn that's larger. I don't know how much this costs, so I don't want you to get tied to any playground ideas. But it has netting, it has, you know, a lot of play features.
Lisa, are we focusing on elements, not colors?
Right. No, yeah, I don't focus on colors right now. Just elements. There's some, this is the other side of the park, has like a netting.
Those spider
and
web
like
things are real popular. Okay. At least my grandkids really like
so them. So spider web is what Harry would like today.
I mean,
we don't have that a lot in our parks right now, so it's
we
good.
We only have one.
I went to 5 parks this weekend, and every single park was new and had the netting.
Yes.
In some very cool format. Mm-hmm.
This is a brand new park with a kind of different kind of climbing play panels.
Kind of looks like the same thing. Climb up, slide down.
Well, that's
what
play-
am I missing?
That's what playgrounds are. Kids just love that. No,
don't forget the swings.
Oh, yeah.
The swings. This one has a little bit more of, has the netting, has the more bottle play panels, has some things like that.
So I appreciate
that's
this
very nice.
As being...
This is different.
Know,
this is brand new from...
Right.
Landscape structures.
Right.
So is this something you think that what do you guys feel about this?
That's great.
That's better than what was.
I'm not sure about the colors, but.
No, forget the colors.
Don't look at the colors right now. Don't focus on the colors.
But I like the climbing and I like the activity.
You like the play panels? Stuffy?
I love the play panels.
Those climbing play panels. That's something different.
What I'm seeing with the, all three is they all have completely vertical posts, and all the climbing is essentially vertical. If we're thinking of this as for younger kids, their climbing is usually on somewhat of an angle, so they don't go kerplunk constantly.
Okay, so remember, this is
some of the nets offer horizontal movement, where the net may be 4 feet tall and you can climb, and it winds and turns sideways.
Mm-hmm. Just trying to get an idea if something is this of like this.
And isn't conceptually Woodlawn,
it's
going to
be
saying it's going to be for
it's
somewhat
be more,
older kids
a little bit older.
With a little toddy area.
Yes, because
also.
Remember that South School is for first to second, so this we want to, I believe.
Yeah.
That we want to go for a little bit older attraction. So this is something, that would do that. The South is so darn close to that. Okay. So yes, no on this one?
Yeah.
Possibilities.
Possibility, okay.
Possibilities.
This is something that's totally with nets. It looks like they're trying to do like a little net, and I'll continue with the next slide, but look at the swings right over
those
here.
Those are the swings we saw at NRPA.
We all like those.
You like those?
Yeah. So when I went to Vernon Hills Castle Park this weekend, and they have one of those, and they have the zip line, which Lisa and I both really love, so when I watch the kids play, and this is just based on my own kids, so I'm not speaking for everyone, but they didn't really like it. I wanted them to like it, and they didn't really like...
They didn't like the circle where they sit in?
They liked when we went to Winnetka, they were on the tire swing for like 20 minutes. And they weren't on that. And I don't know what it was about it. Like, Sophia just wanted to push it with nothing in it.
And nothing, and it wasn't doing a lot of stuff. So it looks cool.
Interesting.
It looks cool, but no one was really using
it.
It's a big footprint.
It takes up a huge amount of space. That's the thing to notice, because we found that too. Because it doesn't really do a lot.
But the tire swing, they love.
But they like the tire swing.
Those two bays right there will probably cost as much as 10 two-pro swings.
Yeah.
Is there a modern tire swing?
I don't know why they didn't like it. I wanted them to like it, but most kids won't.
Is there such a thing as a tire swing?
There are. I already have it now.
So this is the other side of that playground.
What's the problem with that?
They can be challenging.
So that's twirly thing.
They connect it on the top and the bottom.
Yeah, that twirly thing's already asked. So look at this. Again, this is a more futuristic, I would say, with the more modern look to it for a netting. Yes or no?
No? Maybe.
What about the rock climber in the background?
I like the rock climber a lot, and even bigger.
Yeah, we have Shelton.
I like that more than the vertical.
Okay.
I like the rock climber.
I don't feel like in Shelton, though, because it's not on the...
So do you like the fact that it's like a standalone piece?
Okay.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Good to know.
I like the pod thing, and I see that a lot.
And you kind of figure out what you want to do
like
on it?
Different, and I know that we can't do that all the time, but I like that there's separate pods like that.
Okay. Chris, are you looking at this one and seeing that this is... a relatively compact design for a smaller park?
Yeah, this might be, so you might want to think about this as a different park too. So, all right, this is something that just goes, maybe this is one for like a pocket park, maybe not Old Elm, this would not be a good one for that one, which
Jefferson Burden, but this is like a net, it's also a net climber that goes up a little higher. These are all landscapes.
We have that belt.
Yeah, we have that belt right now in Astor.
That like surfboard that they're all standing in?
Yeah, oh, we have that. Yeah, that's
it. Noticed that.
And that's cool. That's in Hubbard Woods, too.
Lisa, could you talk a little bit about the netting that goes up, and even if you fall down, you're
going to and Chris can speak on this, too, because it's much more of experts being the playground inspector. But you climb up this, and the nice thing about this is that at different levels, when you fall, it captures you into the net.
So imagine spider webs that are not all in the same direction. So you're turned sideways as each step goes up. So if you arc a slip, you only fall to the next step, which is turned a different way. Yeah. Very similar to the climber that we have at Friends Park
right
now.
So it can be higher.
Because these things can get 20-some feet tall.
Yeah. It can be higher than you think is safe, but it is safe because of that.
Okay. Yeah. You could do one of these. It's a big triangle one that can take up your whole park. It's just amazing. Kids like it, so...
There's videos of like 40.
So here's Dad's example right here is one right here of a one, and they go even bigger than this.
So that seems like the one in Friends Park, right?
That's probably bigger because of the footprint.
Yeah, but you could even do larger.
Yeah, same idea.
One too also here.
But the one there on the top is like the strings are in like a geodesic dome. That's pretty cool.
That is really cool. So that's a net climber, but it's very neat looking. I haven't seen one of these in this area. Have you?
Yeah, I have not. And I like that because you can't pull the cables out of the ground.
Right.
Or attach to the pipe.
So do you guys like this one? Because Chris, I really like this one. This is kind of fun.
I like them all.
Yeah.
They're playground equipment. What's not to like?
So it really,
It's really, so what we're hearing is netting, definitely.
Definitely netting.
Here's some more of those ideas. So you can see the netting where they work then into the... You have a slide worked in there and here's some of those other like just independent features that you saw at conference. So in conference we saw this one.
We did.
They turn.
And it turns. Have you seen the light?
Yeah,
that
I
one?
Thought that was kind of cool.
Yeah,
that's one of the things I took a picture of.
The one on the top right, they have that at Winnetka. Mm-hmm. It's just okay. I mean, it looks really cool. It doesn't go fast. It like creaks and
see. It doesn't go fast.
It doesn't really go fast.
That's
it still may be Disney, but yeah. I feel like that one on the top left, you can get more kids involved.
I think you definitely can.
And
it
does
more
tons.
More variation. Like probably three times.
Yeah, probably three times. Much, but you can get more. So
I mean, that's the most significant piece of equipment. That's like a $50,000 element installed.
Yeah.
Like something like that.
So that's like Woodlawn, not in a pocket park.
Correct.
Yeah.
So we already have this. This is what we put in at Astor. This is a zip line. We have these in our parks already. This is one of those old features.
Oldie, yeah.
We have that in the park?
Yeah, but it's short. You know, it's the length of a...
We have one at Old Elm. Sure. We had one at Shelton that was pretty long that we took out.
It barely goes. You have to kind of go with that.
The challenge with those is really only one participant can use them at a time, so you're kind of limited with group play. But they're neat.
At this park that I was at on Saturday, the kids were really good about taking turns. There was like 30 kids there.
That's cool.
My kids were obsessed with it. I mean, they loved it.
Wait till I show you.
They were good about taking turns.
Lisa.
So that was a good one. Okay, so this is what we saw. This is at Winnetka.
Yeah.
Little smaller kids.
That too.
This is like a teeter totter. But standing.
I just want to say that top one, and I don't know if it was because whatever, it squeaked so badly, and that's a new park in Winnetka. Oh. So I don't know if it's the maker of it or what, but it was horrible.
They're on springs. They're not like teeter totters used to be. They're just kind of wobble.
Okay, so I don't know maintenance-wise if that's an issue.
What about
little
one where there's four kids?
That's a teeter totter.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That they have them made now where you can't jump off and they fly to the floor. It's really strange.
Yeah. That's
you
the fun part.
That's a joke.
No kidding, right?
So this one has three. So, like, we're thinking maybe like Peter Totter and maybe Friends or something like that.
I think that's a good thing. Some sort of Peter Totter would be good there because we lost all the bouncy and that was for the younger kids.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, so this is the one. I don't know where this is. And this is very, very expensive. This would take up most of your budget.
Well, I saw that, though, with the one that
four
flies Jesus and then...
But so there's four, three of them?
Three different
ones. I want to go on that one.
Yeah.
I like that.
They're not ones you hang on. You sit on them.
Yeah, these are sitting. So see this right here? This girl's sitting on it. That's what you sit on it. And then you can get ones, I believe, with these little chairs.
Mm. Here's a picture of Sophia on it at the park.
Yep, this is a long one.
Yeah.
That's why I knew you were about that. This is pretty new.
It's
awesome.
It's pretty cool. That's something like at Woodlawn, again.
Woodlawn would be, because it's got some geography there.
Again, it is, Chris mentioned, it is one child at a time, so that's why, obviously, this was built with three of them, so they could race back and forth. I'm sure that's the reason for that.
I've seen them with two.
Yeah.
But even if it is just one, I mean, first of all, we don't have thousands of kids at every playground all the time. But also, it is a mechanism for getting kids to cooperate and play together.
Right.
And it really does create that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you don't have to be, it's okay to take a turn.
Yep.
You know, so I wouldn't eliminate it based on the fact that it's one of the
things. Oh, no, I wouldn't either. I think it's pretty cool.
It's like,
I think it's different. It's expensive, but I think it's different, and we know that the limitations of it.
And there's a thrill in it.
Yeah.
And I think,
Do you know if they make them where you can hold them to, or not? Is it just always seated? I guess we can check that out.
The ones that are seated are better for lots of different age groups because you don't have to have the upper body strength to hang on.
Yeah.
But I'm seeing them more now, a lot more with seating than I am the old, like the roller skate that you hung on and kind of went.
Those are really hard to do.
Yeah.
I mean, I've even tried to do it and I can't do it. And it's hard to get it back. If you're not tall enough, you can't even get the thing to go back. Whereas this is low to the ground, so you can get it back. I think those are hard, and you have to be older.
Like American Ninja. Okay, so that's something that you definitely have interest in.
I love that, and the kids went crazy for it.
Okay, that's what I kind of thought.
Great.
That's good feedback. Netting and this thing.
Yeah.
Got to put the musical in.
There you go.
Because we love the musical.
Lisa, I could just remind you of this one. That was what I liked about it was
you
could learn to play the notes, that was an additional element to it, which
I have
the one she's talking about is like they had a playbook by it. It's so cool.
Yeah, so it's not always just random things.
You know, the one that she's showing, I have this.
You know, Woodlawn might be the perfect application for musical instrument park because of the it's so far away from health.
Or an element?
Or one element of that, or like that, you know, don't you think? Because some of the other pocket parks are so close to houses.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. I think everybody seemed to like that.
You know,
if you have any pictures from conference, can you just go and email them to me?
Yeah.
I'll email you on my.
Yeah, please. Okay, so this was just like an exercise, trying to get an idea of what kind of. Is there anything else that I just have? I threw up a couple of pictures. Anything else that's different than netting or?
This one is the loft. Trying to get a better picture of it.
Oh yeah, that one is for like
It's 2 to 5. It's definitely like for, but it, in a
like
corner.
Like a clubhouse.
Yeah, but it has a slide and it has you know other elements to it. They're really promoting it on the.
That's it.
Yeah.
It's a package.
But it's
kit. They
It's just a hot park. That'd be something really cute when we do take it.
I think that when we look at Woodlawn, if we look to attract a certain age group, we have to make sure that age group can't destroy the things we put there for the younger age groups. Particularly sprung toys, hiding type areas you can crawl into and not be seen from the street. So I think we're going to have to challenge Alta Vanua to be really strategic to attract that certain group without giving them stuff to break on the other end.
Exactly. So that's a Woodlawn.
But definitely not like Woodlawn, but like an Astor. You could have done like that 2 to 5 structure. You could do something like this because the 2 to 5 structure is kind of the same. You know, you climb up, you have one slide. So maybe we could think about that instead of always doing it connected to be a little different because it's really cute for the 2 to 5.
Do that and take it.
Here. That's why I think
it's
that's
very
what I think
cute to take it.
I think
it
you should totally do that.
It's definitely very cute. Here.
That's what I was saving that one for.
And I would say too, like avoid monkey bars as much as you can. There's people don't like them. It's so many kids at South School this year have fallen and gotten hurt on them. But so a lot of the parents don't like the monkey bars. Yeah, the monkey bars.
How are they building their upper body strength?
They've been a big issue at South this year.
How are they building their upper body strength?
They're not.
Yeah.
They're
like, they don't do it. They won't get strong. Okay.
Just the journal.
So, at
Lincoln and Crescent, you couldn't do like
Jefferson
Emergency 2 to 5 and do a separate structure like that.
Typically, At Astor, we have what's
He's
called
done.
A link structure. Yeah. It's 2 to 12, so the structure flows all the way. You have smaller elements on one end, larger elements on the other. As we kind of look to expand the footprint and the budget, you can separate the structures. That's fairly typical to do, like a 2 to 5, and then you know a little bit of space. Like at Shelton, you have a 2 to 5, a little bit of space, and then you have the 5 to 12. That can be limited by your budget. Where it's called functionally linked play, where you have a 2 to 12 structure. I would imagine in the neighborhood parks with the budget that we've set aside, we're going to end up with a link structure at most of those parks. We're not going to have the resources for two dedicated standalone structures,
right.
But I would challenge Alta Manu to see what they could come up with.
Yeah, if you could, like, just direct them and say like we're not tied to that, because it'd be nice to see things that aren't just that link structure. Not that it's fine, but we could be creative here and think outside the box, and we do have reserve money if something is really fantastic and we want to move it around. But
if we all do a little research on our own before the next meeting and we discover playgrounds that incorporate some of the features and functions that we're looking for, yet have a theme, nautical barn, whatever, the astronauts, who knows, send those pictures in to Lisa so she can print them out with all the coloring the park district has.
I would recommend that everyone go on the landscape structure site and look at their featured premier parks, because there's some great ideas in there. And they were also saying that they worked with their local landscape structures rep and asked him to come up with specific playground for them, and he designed specific playground just for their park.
That's exactly what we do.
So he's talking about
the landscape structures.
Those are
right.
Typically outside. No, there's. Modular component playgrounds like we do, where
yes.
we have thousands and thousands of different components and they assemble them into a custom playground, and then there's actual custom builds.
Yes.
Those are starting kind of in the $1 to $1.5 million
right,
range.
Right.
So, you know, when you look at those, the landscape structures catalog, they don't really put what things actually cost turnkey in there. It's great to identify the elements that you like. This is a really cool element. That's a really cool element. But when you see the whole structure, it can be kind of off-putting as to what it actually takes to execute that. But I definitely think it's a great resource.
So if you have any ideas of concepts that you like, I really like netting, and I really like this
yeah.
one and this one, don't get stuck at a playground element.
Yes,
because
yes,
because
what do we know?
We're going to let the architects design that. That's what they're really good at, working with the
yeah.
So
my
recommendation is much like what Stephanie did, is actually if you can do it without looking creepy, is go on a Saturday and watch kids play.
Mm-hmm.
If you can really see which ones
are... Oh, am I going to do that?
You're not.
You got to pick one of my kids.
You have 10 windows?
I just took my
kid. For a day.
No, there's also... I went to a new park in Northbrook that just opened. It's like behind Sunset. That one looks just okay. There's a new one opening in Deerfield that I took pictures of that I'm going to go back to when it opens. But a lot of it was the netting. But if you go on the landscape structure site, try and look at the one in Minnesota. And I'm sure this was like $4 million. But some of the features that they described, that they designed for it, we could put in. And it's a really cool park. And it has everything that we're talking about.
The easiest one is the Winnetka one, to go there and kind of just sort of sit on a park bench with a cup of coffee and watch kids play.
And if you have any elements that you like, just send them to us and we'll look at those and see how pass them on to, and probably do that within the next couple of weeks, who will start planning with Alta Manu on the other three parks.
Okay. Very good.
Lisa, the Winnetka has two that are probably worth, the Hubbard Woods Park and the one downtown. What's that, Dyer or something?
Dwyer.
I mean, but remember that we're trying to do unique playgrounds and not going to do something exactly what mm-hmm. right next door has to us.
Yeah.
So I would recommend what she said, is look at it, different elements that you like and pass them on to us, and then we'll pass it on to Alta Manu. Does that sound good?
And you've been to Dwyer, right?
Mm-hmm.
The one in the
mm-hmm.
So it's sort of fun
I
to see
there's too
what
much
kids
going
are attracted
on there,
to.
In my opinion.
Certainly, and you
it's,
get
it's
one
lot.
Of the things we learn. Is that
what's interesting is that,
there.
Just like Stephanie said, is watch kids.
Yeah.
Because what you think you like is not what kids like at all.
And what you think they play on,
so
you
do.
Not necessarily.
So we do. I mean, that's like exactly what Alta Manu does, and that's what Chris does, and that's what I do, and that's what we go around and watch and see the kids' interactions before
mm-hmm.
we put something in our park.
Great.
So.
Okay, so...
Okay, that's it.
I feel
okay.
you. Okay, so...
Good night.
I entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
Okay. You can't do seconds. So I'm going to send it on the board.
Okay.
Because you're out of the league.
Good.
All right. Thank you.